Palestinian Christians celebrated Easter this week, but just like their Muslim compatriots, they find themselves in the same death and destruction, the same hellish reality that Israel has created in what has been the 26th week of this genocide. Israel's genocidal war on Palestine continues, with the different fates of Palestinians mattering not, as all that matters to the Zionist movement is that those suffering are Palestinian, nothing less. The first story we'll touch on this week happened at the United Nations Security Council, where we finally got a ceasefire resolution passed through. For the first time, the US abstained instead of vetoing, but the reason for that is because the actual resolution itself isn't as strong as it really should be. So let's begin by looking at it. The core demand of the actual resolution is one for an immediate ceasefire for the rest of Ramadan, which, for those of you who don't know, ends on April 9th, so in just over a week. This is in theory meant to be a precursor to lead to a lasting, sustainable ceasefire, but there's nothing really to oblige any of the parties to move towards that. Additionally, the resolution itself speaks of the Israeli hostages, but again, it's not really a surprise. Doesn't speak of the Palestinian hostages, the Palestinian political prisoners who have been imprisoned, often without charge. There are currently thousands of Palestinians who are sitting in Israeli prisons who have never been charged and are there simply because Israel needs to flex its muscles and make sure that there is fear instilled in the Palestinian population. It's not really a surprise, of course. The US did say that if the resolution itself didn't mention the Israeli hostages, they would have vetoed it. And so I guess this is really the maximum that really could have been put in for the US to abstain from this resolution. And otherwise, little details include simply condemning Hamas. Obviously, what would a resolution or what would anything in this world look like if we didn't condemn Hamas? But anyway, let's look at some of the reactions to this. Obviously, it was rejected by Israel. The military offensive obviously continues, as we've seen. But now when we kind of look at how the Biden administration has reacted, it did call for humanitarian aid to be given, or more aid to be given into Gaza. However, at the same time, Biden is authorizing billions in military equipment to send to Israel because, according to the US State Department, Israel is complying with international law. I think we all have eyes, we've all seen the videos, we know that this is very much not the case. We've reported now a couple of times that it seems like there are tensions rising between Washington and Tel Aviv, but behind closed doors, it's all the same. It's business as usual. But anyway, just to give one final point for this, because we often speak about the UN, and the UN has received a lot of criticism for its role in this genocide and how it seems a bit useless at times. And again, I mean, this resolution, although it passed, it lacks a mechanism to implement sanctions on Israel or to kind of force Israel to do anything. Obviously, if it did, it would be vetoed by the US. But I guess to look at it on a positive note, individual countries could use this resolution as a means to enact their own sanctions on Israel. That's, I guess, the most positive spin that we can really put on this. But now moving from the UN to the ICJ, the court where Israel has been placed on trial for genocide. We have now, in the last few weeks, due to the warnings of a famine, which are apparently on the brink, yet we've already seen a lot of people die, a lot of children die, because of insufficient food and drink. The ICJ has ordered Israel to provide more immediate, unrestrained aid deliveries because, as anyone with two eyes has seen, there is just not enough going in right now. And as I've said, we're basically at the famine now. We keep speaking about it being on the brink, but we're basically there now. Theoretically, with this new resolution or with these measures, the provisional measures that the ICJ is obligating Israel to fulfill, there should, in theory, be now more food, water, electricity, fuel, shelter, clothing, hygiene, sanitation, medicine. All of that should be going through in higher quantities now to Gaza. But given Israel's track record, can we really expect anything to change? Especially when they've already been told by the top court in the world for these kinds of issues that it's possible that they are committing genocide. And since then, since the original ICJ hearings, we've just seen Israel restrict even more. The aid, the conditions in Gaza have just progressively gotten worse, as if it wasn't already bad before the genocide. And I guess the irony of all of this is that there really are hundreds, if not thousands, of trucks full of aid waiting on the Egyptian side of the border, trying to get into Gaza, but the blockade continues and shows no sign of it ending anytime soon, really. These trucks would really solve the issue very, very quickly, but instead we have politicians playing with people's lives, human lives, and no consequences to suffer for that. And I guess the real piece of evidence for that is really the fact that countries from around the world, the US for example, are not willing to tell, to demand Israel to end this, to end the blockade and to allow aid to get in. Instead, they're happy to work with or through this blockade by delivering humanitarian aid by air and dropping these massive boxes, which in some times have failed to sort of activate the parachute and which have killed people as a result. This is all for a show, and as I just said, politicians are playing with people's lives here, and they're not paying the consequences for it. But anyway, let's move on to the final story of the week, or the final big story of the week, and that was that the UK government failed to publicly announce their official legal advice that they'd received from their lawyers, saying that Israel is violating international humanitarian law in Gaza. What this in essence really means is that the government in the United Kingdom and every single other government in the West, the so-called enlightened world, let's say, they have just been ignoring, or well, not even ignoring, just hiding the reality that is the war crimes that Israel is committing on a daily basis. They come out to their public, to their population, saying that they stand with Israel because of the October 7th operation by Hamas, and that always seems to be a justification for them to support Israel's genocidal war now on Gaza, on Palestine, in its entirety. All of this whilst they're being told by their lawyers, by their legal experts, that what Israel is doing is incredibly illegal. And so to put this in layman's terms, the government is quite clearly lying to us. Not only the government in the United Kingdom, but every single one of our governments are lying to our faces because they know they can get away with it. And maybe you're asking why this is happening, why they're so determined to keep this quiet and to maintain what seems to be an unsustainable stance given the humanitarian situation in Gaza, given the suffering currently going on in Gaza. And the simple reality is that the reason why this continues is because taking on this legal advice would mean that the UK, or in all cases, it would mean that all governments would have to cease their arms sales to Israel or cease relations, because at the end of the day, it's very much illegal to be supporting these war crimes, to be supporting this terrorist state. But for now, it's difficult to really know in which direction this is going to go, because this was just a leak from a member of parliament who was recorded unknowingly at a private fundraiser. And so I guess at this point in time, the only thing we can really say is to put pressure on your representatives, on your politicians, because at the end of the day, in what is supposed to be a democracy, our voices are meant to be heard. And so there should be consequences for ignoring war crimes, as our governments are currently doing. But anyway, let's now begin to close this episode by going through some short but also important headlines of things that have happened throughout this week. What we've begun to see in the Middle East, and most notably in Jordan, are very consistent, very determined, very strong protests that are emerging against relations with Israel in its entirety, happening in the capital of Jordan, Amman. We're seeing thousands of people take to the streets every night in protest to the government's untenable position, really, that is relations with this terrorist state. When the population itself, a large proportion of the population itself, are Palestinians. This is definitely something that we're going to keep an eye on, because as a result, we've seen small local protests emerge in Morocco as well, for example, and even Egypt, where, well, they're two countries which also share relations with Israel. And finally, the last thing that we'll touch on is that the UK's biggest Israel-based military tech company, Elbit Systems, has been forced to shut down amid increased security costs and a loss of profit caused by activists at Palestine Action. This is really an amazing piece of news, and again is another form of direct action that people can take to physically stop this genocide going on by preventing these factories which produce the weapons which will then be dropped on Gaza, the bombs that will then be dropped on Gaza, from working. And so we'll hope that this is the start of, or at least the first of many factories to fall, and the first of many agreements between these governments with Israel for weapons. We'll hope that this is now the beginning of the end, and that this genocide nightmare that the Gazan population has had to endure for almost half a year now is on its last legs. That's all we have time for this week. We'll see you again next week. Thank you, and goodbye.